Hello and welcome to the Frogcast here on this recap of the second of the last game of the regular season. It was emotional, it was heartbreaking, but at the same time, I am dripping with pride as the Frogs lost 30-29 in front of 86,000 people in Norman, Oklahoma on Saturday night. The game was on ABC, we fought back and did everything we could to put ourselves in a position to win a game, and today we are going to talk about the things that went right and maybe some weigh in on some controversial calls that at the end of the day we still feel good about as fans. That and so much more on this episode of the Frogcast. Well, guys, I wish we were here to talk about a big win of 31-30 over Oklahoma, but we lost 30-29, and we went everywhere from just like being ecstatic when Porter caught that touchdown to just being utterly depressed when Kohlhausen's pass got knocked down, and everywhere in between through that game. So, Trey, just take a minute. Why don't you tell us, what was that roller coaster of emotions like for you, for a Frog fan, to be so disappointed and proud at the same time?
Yeah, I am lucky that I'm not like a betting man, because I was really contemplating signing up for one of those online betting sites before the games, because just to be 100% honest, I thought the Frogs were going to get drilled in Norman. Like, I'm talking about like 21 or more. I didn't see them just with no Dotson, with no Boykin, all the other injuries that they've had. I just thought, you know, Foster Sawyer making his first, you know, start. I didn't see it being good for the Frogs, and they proved me completely wrong. And thank God I didn't sign up and bet the house on the Sooners, because it obviously would have lost. So it was a great performance. I'm not the type that's into moral victories, but I mean, I think you have to somewhat be kind of proud that they were in that game. I mean, just they had no, you know, they had no business being in that game, man. They were, and they fought back, and you know, Foster Sawyer was all right, and based on what we saw against Kansas from Brohm, when they put him in against Oklahoma, I got even more worried, but that kind of turned out to be the right decision. So, you know, it was up and down. The defense, you know, played good. And yeah, it's, I'm somewhat happy, somewhat disappointed. Normally I would rather get blown out kind of like we did against Oklahoma State than lose by one to Oklahoma. You know, just because those close losses are always a little bit more heartbreaking, but it is what it is. I think, you know, Frogs laid it all out on the line, and they just came up on the short end on this one. I mean, that's really what it was.
Yeah, you can't comment on the effort or the passion or the fight of this team. We've had 44 different starters through 11 games, which has to be some kind of NCAA record. And so the best that I could tell, we went through that game without losing anybody to injury in terms of for the season, rest of the season. But it was a high, it was a low, it was all kinds of things. Daniel, when you think about your expectations going into this game, kind of piggybacking off of what Trey said, where he was ready to bet his mortgage on the Frogs not making it, take off your purple glasses for a second, if that's possible. Are you honest enough to say that you agree with Trey that we were not supposed to be in this game and that there was a potential for a blowout?
Oh, absolutely. I expected to get just pretty much destroyed, you know. I knew they were a better team than Oklahoma State. I'd seen how the defense had just, you know, throughout the year we thought they were improving, and we, you know, it did in some respects, but then you'd get games like these last couple and where they just were terrible. And so you're like, well, you know, there's only, you can only improve so much because it's just the situation, you know, because they're so young and, you know, who's hurt and how many are hurt and all that. So, yeah, I thought we were going to get blown out by maybe close to 30 or so.
Well, luckily that didn't happen. I mean, I think every Frog fan, if true serum was poured through them, would agree with you guys. And I would, too. I had a friend of mine that's an OU fan asked me what I thought a couple hours before kickoff. And I said, we're either going to win by 3 or lose by 30. I don't think it'll really be anywhere in between. And I was damn close to being right, but I was leaning more towards man, if things get out of hand, it could get out of hand really fast. I didn't think we were going to be able to do as well as we did, but we did. And I think that's a compliment to this team. I think it's a compliment to this coaching staff. I think it's a compliment to their resilience and their guts to see that this team that is like a damn MASH unit has gotten to where they're 9-2 on a potential to go 10-2 to land in a good bowl, a great bowl, when I don't think anybody else in the country could have been able to do what Gary Patterson and this team has been able to do up to this point. The big takeaway from this game that people have argued about, that pundits have weighed in on, that message boards have exploded with, is did the Frogs, and in the end Gary Patterson, make the right decision to go for two at the end of the game when we were losing 30-29, when an extra point potentially sends it to overtime? They still had 50 seconds left, we can't forget. But it also had the potential for the 2-point to take the lead, and that puts Oklahoma in a different position. So let's just hash through this as bluntly as we can. Trey, did we make the right choice going for two with 50 seconds left in the game after Porter caught the touchdown?
You know, I messaged you as like maybe 10, 15 minutes after the game was over, and it was absolutely the right call. 100 times out of 100, that's what you do there. And to me, the most frustrating part of it is not that it didn't work, I guess. And it's hard to say that it didn't work. The play would have worked if the pass was thrown correctly. And that's the thing, is we can sit here and say, oh, you know, should have played for overtime, but the call would have worked. And if it actually did work, nobody is second-guessing Patterson at all. Everybody's blowing up Twitter talking about Patterson's guts, his huge balls, his game management skills, everything. They're all over Patterson, so it doesn't work out, and everybody's second-guessing everything about the game, and it's ridiculous. When you're on the road in a hostile environment, in that situation, you go for the win every single time, especially with your – I mean, at that point, I mean, whatever you want to say, Foster or Brohm, second, third, you basically have your third-string quarterback in the game. Hardly anybody wins in Norman. You have that opportunity. I go for it, and I back Patterson on that 100%, and I just don't see how you can go against that, especially – as TCU fans, you've seen it work out. You know, we've seen it work in Boise. We've seen it work against West Virginia. We've seen that same scenario work out in our favor. So, to me, I have no problem with it whatsoever.
Daniel, do you agree with Trey?
I do. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That's, like you said, that's what you do. And the reason we're mad, or whoever is mad, is because it didn't work out. And it should have. The pass wasn't thrown right, and it sucks. But that's, you know, but like Trey said too, if he makes it, and we get the 2 points and we win, and you know, assuming they don't come back with the few seconds they had left, you know, it's a huge upset, and it's, you know, but sometimes it just doesn't work out, you know. But to do what they did and get as far as they did, coming back, considering where the team is, and as much as it sucks that they couldn't quite close it off, it was awesome.
Yeah, every one of us that's listening to this podcast has watched the 2-point conversion in the Rose Bowl 100 times. And we've seen where Bielema decides to go for two. They don't run the ball to their big back that had been plowing through us on that entire drive. And what every one of us knows is two things. That tight end is wide open. That tight end that makes the break in the end zone in the Rose Bowl is standing wide open, and Tank Carter makes a play. He's on a blitz, and he's smart enough to back up, to actually not do what was asked of him, get his hands up, and knock the pass down. That's essentially what happened to us. We drew up the right play. We had the guy wide open. You know, the guy just made a play. It just didn't work out. It was absolutely the right call because, I mean, I'm just going to reiterate what everybody said. I mean, Boise State, we go for two and we beat them, and everybody says Patterson's just an absolute stud. If we do this, I mean, he gets handed Coach of the Year award in the conference and maybe nationally. It just didn't work out, but it was absolutely the right call because we can't go to overtime with them. I'm just going to drop 30 seconds of commentary on why you can't go to overtime in Norman. Momentum is a myth in overtime. It absolutely is. Our offense loses momentum without Boykin when we get inside the red zone because Boykin is able, all of those leaps and jumps and spins, guess who can't do that? You know, no other quarterback in the country. He is able to do that. And if I am Lincoln Riley and I have P. Ryan in the backfield and we're just on a 25-yard field, he is getting the ball every dang time until that safety bites and Sterling Shepard's wide open. So I think we're at such a disadvantage in overtime. You don't play for overtime in Norman. You go for the kill. We went for it. It didn't work. And I have zero problem with what happened. And I'm just going to say, if you disagree, that's fine. But if you disagree with this sense of blame or that they did something seriously wrong, just shut up. These kids put themselves in a position to win, and it didn't work. And I don't fault anybody. And just don't blame them. It's awesome. This was a great moment. It just didn't work our way. That's all I have to say about it.
And Jeff, I would also like to just add that the people, I mean, not everybody reads Killer Frogs or reads, you know, Rivals or whatever message board you prefer to read. But there has been a lot of people out there second guessing the coaching staff, not just Patterson, but, you know, the coaching staff in general. And to me, it's ridiculous because without this coaching staff that is, I would almost say, elite, whatever you want to call them, excellent. This is a really good coaching staff. Without this coaching staff, the Frogs aren't even in this damn game to begin with.
Oh,
so,
no.
You know, if you want to criticize them, like you said, you have the right to criticize them. But sit back and think, without this coaching staff, this team, with all the injuries and all the problems that they're having, they're not even in this game if this staff doesn't prepare them and get them ready the way that they did for this game.
No, we're 6-6 without this coaching staff.
Yeah,
I mean, the blame of this staff for anything, nothing. This is the best coaching job Gary Patterson has ever done. I mean, to squeeze up to this point 9, and we're going to talk about it, 10 wins after we beat Baylor, to squeeze that kind of season out of this triage unit is just absolutely amazing. Yeah, so stop blaming the coaches for getting us to this point. Well, let's pivot here to the first time that we went for two. And, there's a vocal minority that didn't agree with going for two down there with 50 seconds to go. But there is a much more rational base that says we should not have gone for two early in the third quarter after Aaron Green had made an amazing run. I think that run got lost in that decision there. Aaron Green makes an amazing run and gets us to the end zone. Daniel, I'm going to start with you, buddy. What do you think about the decision to go for two there in the third quarter after Aaron Green ran it in?
I'm not against it at all, based on the circumstance. I think, you know, as we were talking about it pre-show, it came up that it looked like we weren't able to score any points, and we were going to try to get what we could get when we could get it. And there were a couple other reasons, but it wasn't just some bizarre out of nowhere call. I mean, that's what a lot of people are treating it like that. They're saying the second one is whatever they were saying. Anyway, they were complaining about both because everyone's complaining about everything in this game because we lost. But I'm not the biggest expert on when towards the end of the game. I know when and when not, but in the middle of the game, there's a lot of reasons to do it, and I didn't feel that uncomfortable with it. But, of course, if it had worked out, I'd been pleased.
Yeah, that's kind of the way it always goes. Trey, what did you think about going for two there in the third?
Yeah, I'll straight up admit it. I didn't think it was a good decision. And Patterson even kind of admitted as much in the post-game press conference that he, you know, looking back at it, he doesn't know if that was, you know, the best decision there. But I mean, I kind of get the thought process behind it. 'Cause like Daniel said, you know, the Frogs weren't scoring good. At that point, they score, you know, it's 23-13. So if you kick the field goal, it's 23-14, and you're still down 9, which means you still have to get a touchdown and a field goal. You go for 2, which would make it 23-15, so that cuts it to 8. So then at that point, you know, if you can get one more score and go for 2, you can at least tie it up there. Because, you know, worst case scenario, like they didn't get it, so it's still 10 points, so it's still a 2-score game. So I get kind of the mindset. I just think maybe that they were looking maybe too far ahead, because it was still, that was still really early in the third. So, you know, second guess some armchair quarterback. But then you also can't say that the game plays out the exact same way if you just kick the field goal. I mean, yeah, I don't know how much that field goal would change, you know, necessarily Oklahoma's philosophy, but you can't say also that the game will play out the exact same way. So I get it. I don't know. I wasn't for it, but that's looking back at it. If it works and then they win this game, like, I'm probably not second guessing it at all. So probably not the best decision to go for it there, but it is what it is.
Yeah, the rationale is, you know, objectively just looking at the situation, it makes sense to go for it there. We had had, on the second possession, you know, Foster Sawyer lights it up with two big hits to Lissenby, and we score the touchdown. Between that touchdown and when the OU punter, you know, had his knee down, and we basically forced a turnover, between those two plays and when Aaron Green scored on the next play, we had 6 possessions with 3 punts and 3 turnovers. And there was absolutely zero indication that we were able to move the ball, to run the ball, to throw the ball. They had stacked up with Lissenby to be able to try to take that away the best they could. And so to get to that spot and to force that turnover, get the immediate score, they were going for 2 because they didn't have a lot of confidence that we were going to be able to score again. And that confidence, lacking of confidence, was rooted in reality, which is we're either throwing an interception, we're fumbling it, or we're sending Ethan Perry out there and hoping that he kicks it deep. And so it made sense in the time to get from down 10 to down 8 and then be able to set yourself up to go for 2. And actually, they were playing for a tie there. So if you want to be frustrated with them about not playing for a tie, that, I suppose that's the location to do it. But it just didn't work out that way. And I don't fault them. I understand their decision. I just wish we'd have gotten both of them. It would have been nice. Well, one of the more controversial calls is Ty Summers being ejected from the game for targeting. And this is one that I know we're all going to disagree on. And the internet has disagreed on it. And, you know, and there's some OU idiots that are picking on Ty Summers like it was his job to knock Baker Mayfield out of the game. And if Ty Summers is anything from what I understand, he's a stand-up guy. Debating the call, the rule, and the spirit of the rule, you two guys, what did you think about that call? And, yeah, I guess you can answer it either way. Should it have been targeting? And do you think this targeting obsession is good for the game?
Well, I guess first off, I'll just start off with I hate the targeting rule for against TCU. Either way, I hate it. When I see it in other games, I hate it. I just think at sometimes the human body doesn't allow you to always just turn your head to the side or make sure your head doesn't hit the other player's head even just a little bit. I hate the rule. I hate everything about it. I think maybe there are certain circumstances that you can call it, but for most point, I think that it gets called improperly. In my opinion, I guess when you absolutely look at how the rule is defined, I'm wrong. I blew up on Twitter last night after this call, but all of my followers, you know, everybody, TCU fans and not, kind of said, yeah, it's targeting, but I can't. There's a point when you're running and, you know, Mayfield's going down, Summers is going down. When you're that low, like when you're making a tackle damn near on the ground, like you can't really, I don't know, position your head in a way that it just, I don't know. But then when you look at it, he did kind of lead with his head. But at the same time, like I said, like the human body, you can't just take the head off and say, okay, I'm going to go tackle with my head off to make sure just my shoulder pads hit. I don't know. I hate it. I hate everything about it. And I guess I'm on the wrong side based on what everybody else is telling me, but I hate it, and I don't like anything about it.
That's a really accurate summary. I like that. I hate it. I don't like it, and I hate everything about it. Daniel, what did you think of that play?
I don't like targeting either, but based on the rule itself, yeah, that was targeting, even though I don't like it. I don't think it was intentional. Just like Trey said, there's just, you know, after you've basically committed, you know, it's inertia and momentum and all of that, and you've only got so much time to react, and there's only so much you can do once you've committed to flinging your 200-plus pound body in a certain direction. I understand, I suppose, the intention, the good intention maybe of the rule, you know, because you don't want the, you know, people getting concussions and stuff. And that's a pretty hot topic all across football. But it's making the game just goofy. I mean, if I don't know, it's going to affect it in a negative way, I feel. But as far as that call, I don't like targeting. I think it's just one more step in the wussification of everything. It's just the next step, and next time it'll be something even more ridiculous. But in that particular instance, you know, that's the rule. So I do believe that was correctly called. But I don't, as far as like the spirit of it that you said, the referees up in the booth, whoever does the replays, because if you're down on the field, you see it live. That's, you know, it's really fast. It looks like maybe he did intentionally just try to spear him right in the head. But if you're up there and you can see it in slow-mo, you've got to have a better sense of, okay, this is when he kind of flung himself, and then all of a sudden Mayfield's falling to the ground. So he's trying to, you know, you've got to have a better, instead of just, yep, he hit his head, targeting, kick him out. You know, I think that could be improved. I don't see how it would be because the referees are all idiots. But Jeff,
especially in the Big 12,
definitely. And although I thought it was a decent called game overall compared to other games, anyway, Jeff, you've coached. When you're coaching kids on how to tackle, how does that play into how this works out? Because you teach them to aim a certain way and a certain, you know, your head at this part of the ball heading forward and stuff. How does that work as far as, are they doing what they're taught and then being penalized?
You know, that is a great question. I was actually going to say that, and I didn't tell you I was going to say that. That is a great question. I think that this will correct itself with better informed coaches at a young age that are able to kind of graduate that form of tackling out of the system. You know, as somebody, I've coached junior high and high school football, and I've coached little kids football. The problem is when little kids learn how to tackle, they got a dumb, idiot, loud dad that is in charge of the team and not somebody that knows how to teach effective, safe, hard-hitting tackles. And so I think with this emphasis, I coached in a high-level league for what we would call basically travel football where I live. And, you know, the tackling is literally taught at a clinic by the people that are trained and licensed about, you know, how to hit clean, how to hit hard, but also how to, the emphasis on targeting has really started to sink in at youth football. So I think this is going to correct itself over time. You know, there's losers that want to hit somebody in the head every time. And those guys, you know, no matter what you teach, you can't regulate that out of the game. But I think some of this incidental stuff is going to basically be relearned or learned right at a young age and not have to be relearned when you're 19 years old and you run a 4.5 40 and you have to make a split decision on a quarterback that's breaking tackles left and right like Baker Mayfield was last night. So that's my view on how this is going to get remedied. But the other thing is, I just feel bad for Ty Summers because he, you know, the letter of the law he violated, the spirit of the law he did not, and it, you know, it hurt a kid. I mean, that is, I suppose, what they're trying to stop. I mean, he couldn't come back in the second half. And so if these are the hits that caused those things, I can't fault them because that's what you're trying to avoid. And it hurt Oklahoma, and we have to be honest enough to say it led us back in the game because Trevor Knight is not Baker Mayfield. But I just feel bad for him because he's had a great season. I've just watched him improve game by game. And he got called out on national TV and probably has a bunch of losers with six teeth in a trailer park tweeting at him about what a fool he is, about how he was sent out there to go hurt Mayfield. And I hate that for him because that is the furthest thing from what he's intending to do. So.
Yeah, it's been pretty gnarly. I've seen it all across online. I didn't even like it when I saw it live. You know, they're kind of just booing him and giving him thumbs down and stuff as he walks away. And you know,
yeah, or one finger up.
Yeah, and it, you know, stuff happens. He's not Ahmad Dixon, you know. Come on.
No, he is not. He is definitely not Ahmad Dixon. So, and you got Bosworth on the sidelines, who I love, but that was a dirty, you know, roid user. But you know, hey, let's boo the kid that was going to go to Rice on a full ride scholarship. So,
and if they're so concerned about him getting hit and that was a dirty call, well, then they should also be concerned about the coaching staff who let Mayfield stay in the game until. I forgot when he came out. Was it in the second half? Sorry.
I think it was halftime. Yeah. He didn't come. Yeah.
I think I read somewhere that he complained of a headache or something. I don't know. But if you get hit like that, and he was obviously dinged really bad, and you could see it. He was just – if it was a cartoon, he'd have stars or birds around his head or something, you know. They let him stay in the game, and that is just – I think that's just completely irresponsible.
Yeah, I agree. It reminded me of one of those Michigan games last year where they had a quarterback that couldn't even, you know, make his way to the sideline. And, you know, next time it was time to go out there, Brady Hoke sent him out there to do that. So go out there and take a snap. All right, fellas, one other quick thing I wanted to break down with you as we move on. Wasn't it nice to see the defense make some plays and have some success? That felt really good to see that we're just at least, you know, the foundation of what is going to be there next year on the defense. We're making progress. Trey, what did you see on the defense that made you feel confident, not only for Baylor in the bowl game, but for going forward into 2016?
I was just, impressed by the secondary, by the resiliency, by them kind of swarming to the ball carrier. It was just, I thought, overall, much better performance. I would say, you know, probably one of their better performances, if not their best of the season. It was good. It was a good step in the right direction, especially after, you know, Oklahoma State got into us pretty good, and then I guess, you know, Kansas, but step in the right direction, you know, for the situation in that game against that team. I mean, you know, we're talking obviously focused on TCU here a lot, but I mean, Oklahoma is a really good team, a damn good team. They have a really good shot at making the Final Four. So, from, you know, them to play that as well as they did, it's promising. And, it does make me feel better about next week.
Yeah, I agree with you. Daniel, what did you see on the defense?
I was impressed that they could have such a quick, I guess, turnaround, because even against Kansas and definitely against Oklahoma State, they looked awful. And, you know, like we expected, progress throughout the season. And I thought Texas was going to be the turning point. They really laid it on Texas. I thought, okay, good. We've had a few weeks. We've made some adjustments. They've learned. Here we go. And then we crapped out right after that. And so I thought, well, hell, what are we supposed to do? I mean, how do we fix this? And then it just kept going, and I thought, man, we're never going to fix this because it just can't be. And they stepped it up. I was, you know, they besides the obvious of just P. Ryan running over you like a Mack truck, but that's going to happen to pretty much everybody when you're just undersized guys. But they kept fighting, and the secondary, that was it got to the point all season had such a weird feel because you trust the offense, but you do not trust the defense. And every time they take the field, you're like, okay, what is going to happen now? What's going to suck? And then you have to hope and be like, okay, offense has to make something. You didn't have that feeling yesterday. I didn't have that feeling too much because they were able to, you know, just hold them at time after time. And, you know, they had some slip-ups, but I'm actually kind of made me excited, not only for the Baylor game, but I think by the bowl game, we're going to really see some serious defense again like we're used to, and then next season's going to be even that much better.
Yeah, there was a moment I realized that I wasn't feeling something where in the past, every time a pass would go up, I literally either waited for the touchdown or the flag. I mean, that was really only the two options.
Oh, yeah.
Or you know, in the West Virginia game, this is one of those things we have to, you know, be honest about. You know, they had numerous receivers that got behind our D-backs that dropped passes or the pass was just a little overthrown. Man, when we got into the third quarter, that just evaporated. I don't know if we had any pass interference calls. I haven't thoroughly vetted that. I don't know if we had any pass interference calls against Oklahoma. We played a complete defense, and as Trey highlighted, this is a darn good team. I mean, this team is likely going to make the playoffs. They have been pulling the doors off of people, and we held them to 30 points. At home, at night, in front of 86,000 people, our defense is showing progress for the future. So that has got to make us feel good. Well, I want to take a second here and highlight all the ways that you can follow the Frogcast. I know that we're moving towards the end of the season, but we're going to have some updates about content that we're going to continue to deliver during the offseason, as well as previews of the bowl, some information around National Signing Day, as well as keeping you informed and conversing about TCU football. We hope that you will check us out online at thefrogcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at thefrogcastTCU, as well as our Facebook page. At those links, we're going to post our podcast. We're going to put some fun information on there. You can interact with us on Twitter or on Facebook. We would love to reply with you and interact with you. So anything you can do to share with a friend, tell other people about this podcast, we would really appreciate it. And if you haven't yet, go on iTunes and give us a review and let everybody know that this is your favorite podcast to listen to about TCU, and we would appreciate it. Just, I got to express my gratitude. We came up with this in August. Three of us that had never met one night just hit record, and here we are, and we have an amazing following and people that are willing to interact with us and listen to us. And, you know, if the episode is late getting on there, by like an hour they're right and wanting to know where it's at. Thank you very much for that. We really appreciate you listening to the Frogcast. We thank Killer Frogs for letting us put it on there every Monday morning when we update things with the Frogcast. Well, fellas, I have a challenge for you going forward. We have Baylor this Friday, Black Friday. It's going to be 40 degrees, and it's going to be pouring down rain, and we are hating Baylor, and we are going to beat Baylor. I have one question for you with one caveat. Why do you hate Baylor? And you have to answer in a way that is safe for work. So, Trey, I'm going to put you on the spot. Why do we hate Baylor?
Beep, 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 beep. That's me beeping out all my cuss words. No, but I hate Baylor because when we were in the Mountain West Conference, forget it. Go back even before that. TCU gets left out of, you know, the Big 12. Baylor gets in. Baylor just pretty much is a cellar dweller for their pretty much entire existence until 3 years ago. And that whole time, they're just pretty much clowning on TCU, even though TCU is just crushing them on the field, you know, 45-10. They're just getting their butts kicked. And it just drives me crazy that they got to live off of that just pretty much the success of everybody else in their conference. And while TCU had to fight and claw their way back to where they are now, and the Baylor fans don't give them credit and they talk all the crap and they pretend like football didn't exist, you know, more than 4 years ago, and it's so annoying, and they're so dorky, and I just hate them, man. I don't like anything about them. I don't like Robert Griffin. I don't like Art Briles. I think he's a redneck, and I don't like anything about the program, and so I wish nothing but ill will towards those guys.
Preach.
I love it. Daniel, why do you hate Baylor?
Pretty much the same reasons. Since the Southwest Conference broke up, that was such garbage, you know, taking over. They've never had one lick of success in pretty much anything at the time, maybe a little bit of football. But, you know, here's TCU with a pretty storied past. They had a pretty huge gap where it was just awful. But, you know, two national championships, Heisman, Davey O'Brien, Sammy Baugh, all of that. And then here comes Baylor with their backdoor politicking, friggin' stupid-ass Ann Richards, getting them into this new conference while we get kicked to the curb. And, you know, in a lot of ways, rightfully so, because we sucked. It was just a terrible athletics program overall. But the way they did it, it just pissed me off. And so many things Trey said was right. They're annoying as hell. They're dorky. Art Briles is just a scumbag. I don't like Ian McCaw. I don't like Ken Starr. I don't like their stupid logo. I hate their colors. Their town is just a friggin' dump. And they're annoying. They don't know anything about sports. If you watch their games, their fans friggin' boo. Every time they get a penalty, even if it's legit 100%, they boo at them because they just think, oh, it's against, I don't know, it's bizarre. I hate them. I hope a giant sinkhole opens up right into Central Texas and it just falls right in and we never see them again.
Do they have their freshman orientation where you have to play leapfrog? Is that like a requirement that you put on a puke green jersey, run and scream like you're a 14-year-old at a One Direction conference or concert, and then have to go play leapfrog on national television and pretend like you really enjoy it, like you practice? Like
they enjoy it.
Yeah, they loved every minute of that. And so when you take the dork factor is so high there, and then you take the, you know, that they pretend like nothing ever happened before 2011. And then I'm the one empowered to speak to this, and so I will just go ahead and say it, and if you want to unfollow us because of it, that's fine. These people have been run by Southern Baptists for their whole life. I know they had a split with them in the 90s, but, I mean, like, they have co-opted religion in a way that really frustrates me as a practitioner of faith. And so I cannot stand that. And so I'm sure I'm going to get a bunch of hate mail from Baylor fans because of that. I mean, you can be a school that values faith tradition like TCU does without being, you know, a right-wing fundamentalist, I hate gay school, and like Baylor
except
is.
Except Brittany Griner.
Except Brittany Griner. That's correct. Okay. Well, yeah, she can come out after she graduates.
Whatever happens.
No, yeah, and Art Briles knew nothing about her being gay.
Of course not.
Yeah. So anyway, I want to rant there. I don't know if this is going to survive the edit or not, but, you know, why do we hate Baylor? Because they're a bunch of wannabes. I mean, that's kind of it. I mean, at the end of the day, my favorite part, though, is that it is in Waco, and I don't know anything about Waco other than that's where I stop at the Starbucks to take a leak on my way to Austin, and you pass, like, two La Quintas that they think are five stars, and there's the Denny's by campus, and they don't have a Papa Do's, and they don't have a Texaco, and they don't have a Raceway. They don't have anything really nice in town. And so they're just kind of stuck. So that's why I hate Baylor. Other reason I hate Baylor?
But they do have George's or whatever their claim to fame is. So at least they got that going for them.
Isn't that owned by a horn frog?
I think it is. I think it is. I think he's got a if you show your Baylor ID, you get to pay twice that much for the beer. But you can't tell anybody you drank because it's against school policy.
Is that the dork tax?
I think it's called the dork tax, yes.
Don't dance.
Yeah, no dance, no drinking, no lesbians allowed on the basketball team, you know. So I'm going to get in so much trouble for this, and I absolutely love it. I'm proud
of
it.
You can jump up and down on the sidelines and make yourself look like a fool.
I know, man. It's like anonymous joined a fraternity that was formed by people that got rejected. That's what that looks like to me.
You guys don't see how intimidating that is? Holy crap, that's why they win. Because the other teams are so scared of those guys hooping and hollering and those coaches pretending to hold them back.
Yes. I want to be that guy that holds them back.
I love that. My favorite name that I've heard for them so far is the Jabba Walk-Ons. That cracks me up every time I see that. Like, it's perfect. It's almost perfect, especially when they wear those damn masks. Like, where do y'all get these masks? Why do y'all have masks on the sideline? Like, what is that even about? Like, who does that?
It blows me away.
A young brand.
Oh, yeah. That has to be Art
hashtag.
Riles, right?
Hashtag Art Riles. Hashtag young brand. And if they had masks and were asked about it, you know what Browse's answer would be?
Oh, he's unaware.
He's unaware of that. I was not aware of that. I feel like I'm listening to like some sub-level staffer that is going to get pinned for every like White House scandal testifying before Congress. It's like, I was not aware of this situation. You know, that's what it sounds like to me.
Let's talk.
I want to tell you one other thing why I hate Baylor, and this is the most important thing that we're going to say. We owe these guys revenge for a game we should have won last year that I still get angry when I think about, not only losing to them, but I get angry thinking about that it's okay to lose to a bad Virginia Tech team. We should have won the dang national championship last year and curb stomped Alabama and then curb stomped Oregon and Baylor, whose greatest joy is keeping us out of the playoffs, not getting to the playoffs. Their greatest joy is keeping us out of the playoffs. I want revenge, and I want to take this team that we're playing this Friday, and I don't care that it's not for the Big 12 title. I don't care that it's not for the playoff. I want some good old-fashioned revenge, and I want Boykin to walk off holding his head high, knowing that he beat Baylor on his last regular season game as a Horned Frog, because, damn it, it is time for some Clint Eastwood justice to be delivered to these fools. And I think after this last Saturday night, this is the team that can do it. Am I wrong?
I feel great about this game. I don't know. This one hasn't worried me from the get-go. From the beginning of the season, the Oklahoma games always worried me more than this one did. Frogs have Baylor coming into their house, and I think that the players have so much just piled up like aggression inside of them that they're just waiting to unleash. I'm not saying the Frogs are going to win big, but the Frogs will win on Black Friday, and I guarantee it. They're going to win this game.
You with us, Daniel?
Well, mostly. I think so, because the way if Oklahoma could do it and we could handle Oklahoma the way we did, I think we could have won at Oklahoma. If a couple of other things had just changed, like Cole Housen came in sooner, you know, just not so many interceptions, things like that. Yeah, so we should be able to take care of Baylor. But what scares me a little bit is that I'm watching Baylor. Stidham goes out. Here comes this guy I hadn't even heard of, I don't think, until this week. And he throws like two touchdowns and runs for one. And it's just pissing me off that it's just like one after the other. They just have these guys who are just pinpoint passers, and it's like, when is this going to stop? You know, it's like we have to wait till Briles is dead for this crap to go away, because it almost seems unfair. It's like, you know, as hard as we've worked since, you know, 96, basically 98, Fran, GP and all that coming in, we've had to scratch and claw to get up here. And here comes Briles just recruiting like a snake, basically, to all these high school coaches and getting all these kids and buying them trucks or whatever. And suddenly he's got just an unbelievable system that just next man up. And it's like, what do you do?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I agree with you that this is a plug-and-play system. It works. And as his talent has improved, their system has thrived. That's what's gotten them to where they're at. I don't know if Stidham's going to play. I don't know if Johnson is going to be able to reproduce that. But what I do know is that our coach has you know, page after page after page of how to stop these guys that he has probably, like, you know, in a clinically obsessive compulsive with this game to be prepared for it. And that's the hope that I really bank on, as well as is, you know, just the pride of this program. I don't have any doubt that we're going to be able to, if it's Johnson, if it's Stidham, somebody is going to go punch this guy in the mouth, not dirty, not filthy, not to hurt him, but to let him know, son, you are in for a dogfight. You better get used to that ground because you're going to be down there all night. Yeah, we've been waiting this game for over a year now, a year and a month, almost a year and a month and a half, and I cannot wait for it to get there. I'm flying down Thanksgiving night in order to be there. So we're going to be there in the rain. We're going to be there in the cold. But I have total confidence in this team's ability to get a win. I guess we're all assuming Boykin's going to be back. That seems to be the unofficial report. We know that Dotson will not be back. But if we would have had Boykin on Saturday night at 100%, we would have beaten Oklahoma. If Boykin is back and healthy and mobile and able to put the ball where it needs to be, I have no doubt that we are going to be able to score against them. And the confidence that our defense has grown up is going to take us a long way. That's all I got on Baylor. That's what I think is going to happen. Hopefully we can come back here next Sunday night and be able to talk about a really big win against the Baylor Bears on a national stage, so that even though it kind of doesn't have the hope that the conference probably had when they assigned it to this day, it's still going to have the passion, and everybody's going to watch it, and everybody there is going to love it. And I hope it does. Hope it produces a great game where the Frogs come out on top, and we're able to have the bragging rights back that we deserve over that petty little junior college down there on the Brazos. So. Oh, man, I'm out of breath talking about Baylor.
I'd be surprised if I don't get in a fight on Black Friday.
Really?
Well, I'm just going to be so amped up, and if I see one 61-58 shirt or somebody says it to me, I'm probably just going to lose it and just, you know, drag them off to the side and beat the crap out of them or something. I don't know. I probably won't. I'm talking out of my ass, but that's how it's just like, oh, I freaking hate these people, you know?
Yeah. Well, don't burn any trees down. So, as long as you don't pull a Harvey Updike, so.
No.
All right, guys, we're going to move towards wrapping up here. Anything else that you thought about, that you wanted to talk about, or that you just wanted to say, maybe something from national football, maybe something from the game? This is your chance to kind of wrap things up here as we come to the end of talking about the game at Oklahoma and getting ready for Baylor. Trey, anything else you want to add?
No, I feel good. I'll just leave it with, I was very, very happy to see Ohio State lose this weekend.
Yes.
Yes, that was nice. That was nice. And it was also nice to see that Cardale Jones and Ezekiel Elliott are such team players and go out of their way to compliment the coaches at their press conference. So if you didn't catch it, Zeke Elliott said, the reason we lost is because our offensive coordinator didn't give me the ball enough, and I want the ball all the time. Which may in some theory be true, but, dude, go talk to your coach. Go talk to your coach in his office. He'd listen to you. So, anytime Urban Meyer gets beat, I smile.
Yeah, did you guys see that awesome top 10 matchup between number 2 Alabama and number 8, Charleston Southern?
No, I did not. I did not see that. I didn't know Georgia was ranked that high.
Yeah, ESPN had it there on the screen. You look where the name of the team is, and the score is next to it. But on the other side, it says Alabama, and it's got the little 2. Above that, it says Charleston Southern, 8. What they don't tell you is 8 in the FCS. But that's... that's the ESPN propaganda machine. I mean, good God, man.
I know. That is embarrassing. That even made Paul Feinbaum blush. That should tell you everything you need to know about that. So
that's like that's like that top 11 they put in there one time because
yes,
they want to get enough Florida. SEC teams, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I'll tell you, my highlight of the week was I got blocked on Twitter by Harvey Updike, who poisoned the trees at Auburn. And so he made some disparaging comment about Cam Newton and how it was a great win for the state of Alabama that Cam Newton lost. And I said, to express your frustration, I would stay home and not go out in public because I've heard bad things happen when your team loses. And he tweeted at me that said, delete your account, and then he blocked me. And I just look at that as a badge of honor. If I, the more people that block me, the better. That's, I don't block people when they annoy me. I just keep tweeting at them until they block me. And so I got blocked by Harvey Updike. I'm really proud of that. So, you know.
Roll damn tide.
Roll damn tide. That's all I got to say. You might not like it.
Roll damn tide.
Roll damn tide. That's right, man. You know what? We ain't Bama. You know, my daddy ain't Bear Bryant because my mama went to see him one night. But I ain't no Bama fan, so. Oh, my gosh. We could go on Bama fans. But we're going to wrap it up, fellas. We have been going for a while here. We want to thank everybody for sticking with us to the end. Hopefully you could tell that the high-minded conversation just kept going forward as our conversation went forward. And everything about Baylor was just a TCU degree in action for some of us. So that's all I got to say. So for Daniel Southern, for Trey Fallon, I am Jeff Mitchell. And I want to thank you for listening to the Frogcast. We'll talk to you next week.